Save big on landscaping projects at Menards. Transform your outdoor living space with easy, no-cut block projects. From fire pits and grill stations to planters and fountains, we offer hundreds of free project plans that are easy to build with no block cutting required. Check out our huge selection of concrete landscaping block at Menards. And view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hi, welcome to Pod Save America. I'm Alex Wagner, sometimes host of Pod Save America, but also host of Runaway Country. This week, we have a really special interview. I'm talking to Wagner Moura, who you may recognize from his turn playing Pablo Escobar in Narcos, which was amazing. But he is nominated for Best Actor at the Academy Awards. The picture he is in, The Secret Agent, is also nominated for Best Picture, and it is an incredible film, which you should all see if you haven't already. And what brings us together today is the talk of dictatorship, because The Secret Agent focuses a lot on a period of Brazil's history when dictatorship was the order of the day, and the film is set in the 1970s. And what you will notice in that film is the eerie echoes with the society we are living in today. It's not quite as overt, but certainly the freedoms that are being infringed upon, the targeting of perceived enemies, all of it has a real echo with some of the stuff we're dealing with today here in America. And Wagner Moura is an incredible actor, but also a real deep thinker about politics, both here and in his home country, and sort of what this moment means for artists and people who are keen to resist tyranny. So it's a really good conversation. I hope you check it out. This is Wagner Moura and me, Alex Wagner, talking in politics. Take a listen. I did not believe this could happen, and I am so thrilled to have Wagner Moura on the Pod Save America Sunday show. This is a real delight. I am a big fan of your work, which is, I know what everybody says to you when these things start, but I really mean it, and you obviously have the best name in Hollywood.
Oh, thank you so much. No, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. I was looking forward to doing this.
Really? You've been doing so much. I can't believe you really wanted to do an hour-long interview with me, but I'll take it.
No, totally, because, you know, I think it's going to be a different one, this one.
Yeah. It's definitely going to be a different one.
And I'm looking forward to doing something like that.
Oh, I was gutted by the movie. I was gutted by it. I did not there's so many scenes. I'm really going to try and not give spoilers, but there's so many levels. It's gutting on a personal level where it's like the relationship between father and son. I have a kid. I have two boys.
Yeah.
They're 6 and 8. You have three boys, right?
Yeah. I missed that age. Yeah,
oh, no, you don't. No.
Two. Trust me. It's interesting because, you know, each age is a different challenge, but it's also a different kind of, I see photos of them when they were 6 and 8. It was like, oh my God.
I hate my kids so little. Much. I hate them. I mean, I really was like, I think boarding school is a great idea. Today I was like, it's the day. They finally pushed me over the edge. They actually stormed out of the house like 15 minutes ago in my like winter clothing with a pack of Girl Scout cookies and some Gatorade. And they were like, we're leaving. We're done here. And I was like, goodbye.
Hey, goodbye. And they will come back. Yeah.
Calorically, I don't think that's going to be enough, but it might be. Bon
that's
chance.
So great. Yeah.
So it was it's so visceral on so many levels, but obviously to watch that movie, which is about a very specific and dark period in Brazil's history, the military dictatorship that ran from, I think, 64 to 85.
Yeah.
not the end of strong men leading Brazil by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a really perilous time for anybody who dares to think freely or has inclinations and impulses towards democratic systems. And it's chilling. I mean, I kind of wonder, you started filming this. When? What year did you start filming this?
We shot this in 24. I'm so bad with these dates, but yeah, like June, yeah, July 2024, I think.
I mean, okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. You've characterized that in previous interviews. You've characterized that period as a civil military dictatorship. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Hold on, that's them calling me from upstairs.
Yeah, because they ran away and now they're calling you.
They're back. I'm so sorry.
I have three kids. I totally get it.
I'm back. I'm so sorry.
Are they all right, Alex? Are they okay? How are they?
Who cares? Just like, I don't even, I just like, they've been slipping notes under my door. I just, okay. We're fine.
Do they work together? Like, are they like a good
team? Right now, when they're not clawing each other's eyes out, they're united in their rage.
Yeah. If there's one person that understands that's me. Trust me.
It's the Wagner in all of us. Okay.
The Wagner thing. Yeah.
Okay, so you've characterized this period in Brazil's history as a civil military dictatorship because both the political, there was a political organization, but also elites and civilian institutions were complicit in all of this. And I kind of wonder, as you think about that period and you look at the period we are living through right now here in the United States where you live, and you see the capitulation of law firms and universities and to some degree private business, or at least the wealthiest among us, how do you sort of reconcile the movie that you made and the reality in which you live?
It's interesting because this, I love this about films, because films are always like an encounter between what an artist wants to say with a very particular, because we shot the film in 2024. This could have been shot like in 23. Sometimes films, they take time to be released. So when we release a film, it's the encounter of that will, that thing that an artist wanted to say at 2 years, 3 years, 4 years ago with the present. And I always think that this is an interesting thing. For example, I directed a film called Marighella, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was about a freedom fighter in Brazil, a real character. And I had to release the film under Bolsonaro's government, which was crazy. Like, to release a film about a guy who was fighting against the dictatorship under the government of a man who praised the dictatorship and censored my film. So it's interesting to see that now, for example, I love the fact that the film is, that the Secret Agent is being released in Brazil now under Lula, which is a very democratic.
Yeah. Different guy.
Very different guy. I mean, it's hard to say these things with politicians, but I'm a fan. I think Lula is a fantastic a character of Brazilian history. But also, exactly. And now to see the film being released in Europe and in different countries of Europe, like in Spain, it's interesting, the discussions about how Franco's name is coming back to young people, you know, as if like maybe there was this strong president back then that was doing so. And here in the U.S., of course, it's interesting because when you do the Q&As, for example, when you talk to journalists, you end up learning a lot about the film that you did, or like having insights about. I've been learning about the Secret Agent just by listening to American audiences, for example, like kind of questions that they do. Of course, and that's how it was supposed to be, right? Like these parallels, these connections with the present, with what's going on right now.
Obviously you were thinking about Brazil when you made the film. But were you thinking about the United States? I mean, was that something you conceived of? You filmed it in 2024 before Trump had won. So obviously things could have been really quite different once the film was released, but we are where we are. I mean, did you think about our flirtation with and now outright embrace of autocracy?
Yeah, I think the idea of strong governments, of strong men, there is an idea of masculinity going on in the world right now that you know that and that was how it was back then with Pinochet in Chile, with Hitler, this the idea of the macho man that's yeah. gonna solve the problem. I was very impressed when I saw the thing that really, of course, it was when Alex Pretti was killed
yeah.
by ICE in Minneapolis. Of course, that image was so horrible and so strong. But while I was watching it, my brain was like, I could see two different kinds of masculinity there, very clear to me. Like there was a man that put his body in front of a woman or a person that needed his help, trying to protect her. And then there was this other man that were pure rage and brutality. And you could see, I mean, it's just in my nature, but I could go and look at these men and go like, and kind of see all the fragility that they yeah. carried with them, you know, all the issues that these men were carrying with them in order to do what they did to that other human, to the other human beings. I'm traveling like, but I think that we are living in a moment where, yeah, there is a big thing about masculinity.
Yeah, and that's in the movie too. I mean, there are these moments where it's like, your name's Bobby. What kind of name is Bobby? Of course, they say it so lyrically and mellifluously in Portuguese, but yeah. you know, and it's like, this is the 70s and it's like, well, what the fuck? Bobby's a pretty masculine name as far as I know. But this constant battle we seem to have through the ages, at least in modern society, around what makes a man.
Yeah.
And so much of politics is driven by that. And then I'm sure as an actor, it's something you as a man must confront in the roles that you play too, right? This like war, these warring ideas about what makes a man and how, I mean, I don't like how much time do we have to spend talking about fucking men in the world, right? But it is so determinative in terms of like society and social outcomes.
Yeah. And we both have sons. Right, Alex?
Yeah, a lot of them. Too many, one would argue.
It's five, just between us.
Five between the two of us.
So it's what it is also to what kind of values we are passing along to our sons. And
can I interrupt you for a second? Because you mentioned Alex Pretti, and I know you meant you've talked about this before, but you've talked about Renee Nicole Good and Alex Pretti as being kind of similar to the character you play in terms of outcome and I guess tragedy. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I don't want to ruin any endings, but
no.
I just wonder how you see a kinship between, you know, the person that you play in this movie that's set in 1977 and what happened on the streets of Minneapolis in the year 2026.
Yeah, I think we are. We're discussing, it's about values. But I got a little lost because I wanted to answer your previous question about
masculinity.
Yeah, because I'll go back to,
yeah, of course,
to Renee Good. In the film, in The Secret Agent, there is something also about, there is a father and son thing in the film
yeah.
going.
Yeah.
Because my character has a son. You know, but the chief of police of the film has also has two sons, and the killers that are trying to find my character, it's like a father and son thing too. So now going, I think I'm gonna make a bridge between the two things, it's about values, I think. You know, and what kind of values you pass along to the new generations? Because Secret Agent is a film about generational trauma,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and how, you know, these things can be passed along in within an entire country. Brazil suffered of of generational trauma, I think, throughout our entire history. In 79, you mentioned that the dictatorship ended in 85. In 79, we had a law called the Amnesty Law that basically forgave torturers and killers. And that it's like the dictatorship forgiving its themselves. Like, so it forgave all torturers and killers and people that did despicable things.
Here we call it a blanket pardon, and everybody should be expecting more of those when Trump is on his way out of office.
Like that. And so people, that made people sort of like Bolsonaro himself would never have been possible, I think, as a president if it wasn't because of that law, you know, that affected the memory of an entire country. There was like, there are young people in Brazil like that didn't even know that there was a dictatorship in the country. And all people would go like, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. Mm. So again, going back to the first conversation, things that when we were talking about the time where a film is released, it's also interesting that this film is being released in Brazil in a moment where finally Brazil is sort of getting even with its memory. When we sent Bolsonaro to jail, we sent military people that attempted against democracy in Brazil to jail. And I think that just to try to put it all together, I think it has to do, and I said when I won the Golden Globes, that if trauma can be passed along generations, values can too.
That's so important, right?
Yeah. How are we, how can we, exactly. And I think it comes to how are we educating our kids and how the society, how are the crisis of information that we are going through in society, the alignment of the tech oligarchs with the power. That's the thing that scares me a lot in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because I only kind of started to realize that recently. I'm not an internet guy. I'm not on social media. I'm not, but I only understood the alignment of you know, Facebook or whatever, these guys with the far right, with the right and with the Republicans and with the power in the way that they are now. And they all have a project themselves. And I didn't know that because back then, I guess like 10 years ago, technology and social medias, these things were kind of like a world to be explored, even for progressive ideas, right? How can we connect? How can we share ideas? How can the world be connected? And I think that this idea just disappeared in my mind. It's very clear to me right now that this is the disalignment is what it is, you know.
Yeah, they're going to get increasingly powerful as artificial intelligence becomes more of our everyday reality, right?
Yeah.
It's the world is going to be in the hands of tech billionaires who've proven in this hour that they have no moral code, which is a terrifying thing.
It's a terrifying thing.
This podcast is sponsored by Strawberry.me. Let me ask you something. You think LeBron, Patrick Mahomes, or Serena got to the GOAT status by guessing? No, they had coaching. Every pro athlete has a specialized coach watching their form, calling the plays, and finding the blind spots they can't see themselves. That is exactly how they win championships. Yeah, like a little coach named Bill Belichick, who's just snubbed.
What the hell?
By the NFL Hall of Fame. If he's not a first ballot Hall of
crazy.
Famer, literally no one is. So you should work for Strawberry.me and help out other people. So why are you trying to win in your career without a coach? You're grinding away. You're hoping for a promotion, trying to guess the right moves. That is amateur hour. You need a strategist. You need Strawberry.me. I don't care if you're Tom Brady. You need your Bill Belichick. Strawberry.me matches you with a professional career coach who breaks down your game film. They help you negotiate that raise, navigate the politics, and execute a game plan that actually works. And if you're wondering about the cost, think about it. One raise, one promotion, and this coaching pays for itself 10 times over. That is the best ROI in the game. Stop riding the bench in your own life. Go to strawberry.me/crooked. Go today and get 50% off your first coaching session. Strawberry.me, because pros don't guess, they get coached to win.
Pod Save America is brought to you by Uplift Desk. Movement equals mindset.
The all-new Uplift V3 standing desk transforms your desk into a productivity engine. The V3 combines the best of Uplift's V2 and V2 commercial into one stronger, smarter frame. Redesigned feet and steel reinforcements make this the most stable standing desk yet. Assembles in minutes, no stress, no mess. The new Flex Mount Cable Manager comes with every desk to keep cords hidden and tidy. Upgraded everything, speed, stability, ergonomics, and design. Ultimate customization options with the most extensive range of desktop styles and accessories in the industry. We got not one, not two, but three Uplift desks in the office that we share. Me and Tommy, I love it. And you walk in, we're all sitting. Sometimes we're all standing. Sometimes you get a combo. Some of us are sitting, some of us are standing.
It's the best.
You just press the little button, it goes up and down. And the desk just, it looks really cool too. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's the best desk I've ever had.
It also does a good job. It's like a cup holder. It's like very like well-designed ergonomically. There's stuff for all your cords and wires. You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't look cluttered. It's nice.
Sings you a lullaby, puts you to sleep.
Yeah.
It's great.
Gives you a big hug, tells you it loves you.
Transform your workspace and unlock your full potential with the all-new Uplift V3 standing desk. Go to upliftdesk.com/PSA and use our code PSA to get 4 free accessories, free same-day shipping, free returns, and an industry-leading 15-year warranty that covers your entire desk, plus an extra discount off your entire order. That's upliftdesk.com/PSA for this exclusive offer. It's only available through our link.
I do want to get, I mean, I want to go to the ideas of Renee Nicole Good and Alex Preddy, because you made this film in 2024 and then these two people were murdered on video in Minneapolis in 2026. And I know you've said you feel there's a through line between what happens and what happened to people in Brazil and what happens to your character in The Secret Agent and what is happening to Americans like Preddy and Good in this day and age. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, listen, authoritarianism is, I'm not an expert in that field, but I lived in a country that had not only one dictatorship, but some. Our history is full of coup d'etats and authoritarianism and violence and other beautiful things too, but this is a reality in Brazil. Bolsonaro is a manifestation of these forces that are part of what our country really is. And what I understood, or what I understand about this, especially when we were under the government of a fascist a president, is that, and also too, right, going back to the books and reading about, you know, authoritarian regimes, is that there must be resistance. Civilian resistance, you know, and I'm not talking about guerrilla fighters or armed resistance or anything like that, but civil disobedience and like basically what people in Minneapolis were doing, you know, and look what they got.
I mean, we're recording this on the day that Tom Homan, who was brought in to take the reins from the psychopath Greg Bovino and Kristi Noem, is announcing they're going to withdraw ICE agents. Operation Metro Surge is going to be wound down, which is a testament to the bravery and the tenacity and the organization of these moms and dads and neighbors in Minneapolis.
Exactly. And that's the perfect example. You know, I think that this is what has to be done. Just sometimes just record something or blow a whistle or like it's something that shows to a wannabe authoritarian or an authoritarian government that they will face some sort of resistance. Otherwise, they just roll over, and it's real fast. That's the only thing that I can say. For the experience of living in a country where that kind of thing happened many times. I mean, we almost had that, like in a very, we kind of had it with Bolsonaro, but if he had a second term, the way Trump is having, because we all know that the second terms are, that's when they go, because it's basically the population saying, we saw what you did, we liked it, go for it. You know, so this is a very important moment, I think, for that kind of resistance. Yeah.
The other thing that strikes me in terms of parallels is the main character that you play in the movie. Part of the struggle is getting at the truth of what happened to him and what his life was like and who he actually was, his character. And One of the most revolting parts of both the Renee Nicole Good death and Alex Preti was the swiftness with which the federal government decided to destroy their humanity and their memory and their legacy, and just how unhidden that just, it was all happening in plain sight. You know, it was like, we're going to deny the facts of what happened on the ground, but we're also going to call these people domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
That, I think for a lot of Americans, seeing that happen was a real wake-up call. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how to fight against that, right? Like, there's a desire to forget the bad stuff. There's also a desire to look away. But it's, yeah, the part of the thing is to keep looking and keep asking questions.
Yeah, there are things that cannot be forgotten. Things that cannot be forgiven. And I saw the other day Donald Trump saying, like, we have to go over, we have to move on the actions. And I was like, and I go, like, that is dangerous. You know, there are things that you cannot absolutely forget. When I said that I've been learning a lot about the film that I did, talking to people, like, it's like recently in one of those Q&As, I was answering a question about what happened to my character and how it ended up for him. And I realized one thing that I hadn't thought about the film, that this is also a film about infamy.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly what you said, like when you kill someone twice, you know, because you kill the person and then you kill the reputation.
Exactly.
And that's so cruel, and that's typical of this kind of regime. I've been saying this, Alex, and I don't want to repeat myself, but the thing that scares me, it really scares me, and when we're talking about the alignment of the tech oligarchs with the power, is that and the decadence of journalism, and the Washington Post just firing people. This is the thing that concerns me. The idea that the truth is over, or the post-truth, or whatever scholars call
it. Yeah, that we have shared realities.
It's shared realities. You know, we are not living in the same mental space. You know, we are not like, it's not that everybody that voted for Trump or voted for Bolsonaro, they're not like bad people, like some of them are, but lots of these people are just people that are living in another reality.
Yeah, they think the world is operating in a different fashion.
It's a different, and this was something that was always, it's a thing for the far right. They have always done that. But with the technology, now with the fact that you can have a video, this right now could be me speaking, it's me, it's my face, it's my voice, and it's not me.
I know.
And for me, I'm almost 50, this is crazy.
I know.
You know, it's the idea that, like you said, like they can say, it's just that the resistance, that kind of thing doesn't allow them to go that far with the lies against Renee Good, Alex Preti, because there are people here to say, like, this is not true.
Yeah. You know,
but it's becoming more and more common to that these kind of things are going to be taken as the truth. You know,
that people feel they're being manipulated by technology, and that the real truth is not the truth that challenges their assumptions about the world. I mean, that's the thing, is people just want information, data, stories, narrators who confirm that the way they think and see things is the right way. And anything that disrupts that is rejected as false or part of, like some kind of conspiracy. And
yeah,
that is not good.
No.
I mean, has anyone watched your movie and not, like, have you gotten any reactions that have not seen the parallel reality between what was happening in Brazil in 1977 and what's unfolding, not just in America, but in other places with the rise of strongmen? And
no, I think that this has been very clear, and this has been the subject of all the discussions in all the Q&As and all the conversations that we've been having. And I'm glad that that's why we do films. That's why we do what we do, I think.
You live in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a moment when this president is trying to kick out people who are legally here, people that are inconvenient for him, people especially who are from Central and South America. I mean, have you felt any particular peril going out there and being openly political about this and being outwardly critical of certain administrations?
Yeah, I've been always very vocal, right? Like in Brazil, especially.
Yeah. And Bolsonaro, you were on his radar.
Oh yeah, it wasn't easy. It was because, you know, in order to be vocal, you have to be also like willing to face the backlash. Right? That's why I'm against when people go, oh, people, you have to go out, you have to speak up. There are some people that are not ready to do that, and they shouldn't, because the backlash is really strong. Yeah, but I think that this is, did you ask something?
Like, have you worried at all?
No.
Have you worried at all about repercussions?
No, because it would be worst for me to
not
go.
Not say something.
Yeah, to go, but this is how I am. Again, this is me. You know, right. This shouldn't value. This shouldn't be the thing for everybody. For me, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I knew something that I would say and people would listen to me, and I would do it. I wouldn't do it because I was afraid of something or because someone is paying me, you know, or because I have an financial interest that would destroy. Again, talking about values. How can I tell my kids to be honest and to be, you know, to be themselves and to stick with the values that they have if I don't do that?
Right.
So no, I'm not. Of course, the world is totally polarized, right? So when I say something, especially in Brazil, when I say something, like half of the country, I guess, goes like, "That's nice, that's cool," and the other half is like, yeah, I mean,
do people give you a hard time in Brazil?
Oh my God!
Like, what do they do? Do they come up to you? What do they say?
I'm glad that I don't have social medias because it's hardcore. Yeah, when I did that, my film Marighella, and that was under Bolsonaro's government. We received many death threats, and when we were releasing the film, we had to have metal detectors at the door. Yeah, I've been like, when I was on the street, because I go out and was I had to be really pay attention where I was and who I was talking to.
So you decided to follow that up with this film. Like, if I were your wife, I'd be like, how about an animation? how about a Pixar film, honey?
I would love that.
Want to be the voice of a crab? How about that?
I was actually visiting Pixar Studios yesterday.
Yeah, you were.
That's what I should be doing. But yeah, but I think this is how I function, I think, as a person. Yeah.
Well, I mean, hats off to you, and I wish there were more people. I honestly think, you know, we are living in times, and I say this as an American who has lived largely a life of privilege in a very free society as a journalist, but it is really feels like it's time to pick a side. You know, when they're threatening to, you know, arrest and hang for treason U.S. senators, when they're going after the Fourth Estate, and when they're terrorizing communities of color in American cities just by virtue of disagreement, it's like, this is the hour. This is the hour to say something. And I think so,
yeah.
You know, Hollywood is one thing, but if you have a pulpit, if you have a voice, why not use it? I mean, I do want to ask, though, because I say this, and you're in Hollywood, it's another sunny day, you were at Pixar Studios. I was in Hungary early last year, trying to get a sense of what it was like to live in an autocracy. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, as an American, I did not grasp the lived experience of being in Brazil in the late 70s, right? I think most Americans, because we're largely ignorant about world history, think of Brazil as like Carnival and like Caipirinhas and whatever. The movie takes place during Carnival, which I thought was really interesting. But they think of Brazil
which is happening right now.
Well, I mean, the Lenten season, right?
My God, it's so the best.
So, but just talk to me a little bit about how, you know, I do feel like autocracies now they're not like the gulags of yesteryear. They're like like Hungary is a lovely place to visit. You can go have a cocktail and a great meal, but there's not real freedom of speech,
yeah.
Right? And Brazil, it's like, it's still this beautiful place. It's bucolic. There's a lot of sex happening, a lot of sex in the movie.
Yeah,
not gratuitous,
very
and
sexy,
yet
yeah.
very, very sexy, very authentically
yeah.
of the fabric of Brazil.
Colorful, but yeah.
Exactly.
That's and all true.
It's just hard for people to understand that just because your day-to-day life can be one of sunshine and beaches, it doesn't guarantee that you have real freedom. And I wonder how you as a Brazilian think about that period and just the way, you know, people like enjoying their lives. They don't want to have to worry about darkness at the edge of the frame.
You know, when I did Narcos and I was living in Colombia, and Bogota back in the 80s was the most dangerous city in the world because of the bombs Pablo Escobar was putting on the streets and everything. And I was asking my friends in Colombia, well, hey, how was it to live here back in the 80s? What it was? And they were like, dude, we were going out. We were going to bars and living our lives, and then boom, a bomb would explode. And
exactly.
That's one thing that I love in films is to see characters. I love to see characters that want to live, that like to be alive despite of the situations, that because that's how human beings are.
Yeah.
So we're not monolithic. Of course, it's hardcore to be under a dictatorship. But one of my favorite scenes in The Secret Agent is when he realizes that there are hitmen looking for him, and he goes downstairs and carnival is going on, and he goes like, okay, so he gives himself to the carnival and goes. And that's for me, that's very humane. But you were right about this thing, the dictatorships, not dictatorships, but authoritarian regime nowadays. It's interesting, man. I mean, when I think about the dictators from South America and back in the 70s and 60s, 70s, they're all those military guys with, you know, like those hats and things.
Uniforms.
Yeah, uniforms. And it's interesting that they all now, they are perceived as, it's exactly like you said, I haven't thought about that, as like, yeah, this is just, you know, like this is it. This is normal. It's more like a cynical. That's just one thing about Donald Trump that I think it's interesting.
What?
Yeah.
Tell me.
When he, for example, when he invaded Venezuela, right now, he didn't say they had mass destruction weapons or anything like that. He was like,
no WMDs.
Oil, you know?
Straight up, we're robbing this fucking country.
We want their oil. That's what we want. And I was like, wow. Because, yeah, I feel that nowadays these authoritarian guys, they passed as they like to behave as democratic. Guys,
they don't. It's like they don't want people to know it's like a full on dictatorship. No, yeah, they're like, you can still go to Zumba class.
Yeah,
you can still get a smoothie. There's just no press anymore. And also, if you're brown, if you're too brown, we're going to deport you regardless of whether you're an American
to another country that's not even yours.
I mean, but that's the thing of the United States. It's like it's a very careful line, right? Right? You're nominated for Best Actor. We have a Best Picture nomination, and like those are hallmarks of a free and fair society that would champion that level of artistry that addresses the subject of dictatorship so directly. But it's also like, but shit, the rest of the country's like, go to Minneapolis. I was there 3 weeks ago. That sure as fuck did not feel like a democracy,
Alex,
right?
And you say like, I'm nominated for an Academy Award, but if I see ICE people on the street,
right?
I've been asking myself, what would I do?
What would you do?
I don't know, because my instinct. And I know that I have this instinct in me, which my wife gets very nervous about, which is like, fuck you.
Right.
You know? And I have to be careful with that. Because
that's insane. Can I just say, this is insane that you,
yeah, because they, if they,
you are going to the Oscar.
And I speak with an accent and I,
yeah.
Well, it's like they, and they go, I don't know what would I do? I don't know. Should I just pretend that they're not there and try to walk? I don't know if I could be able to do that, you know, or my reaction would be like, confrontation, and that could be very, and that could put my life in danger.
Yeah. Your kids are old enough to know about what's happening. Do you talk to them about it?
Yeah, they went to a manifestation against ICE.
A protest.
Yeah, a protest here.
And what did they talk to you about what you should do or what you would do as a family? I mean, that's so insane that someone who's up for best actor is like, if ICE comes, fuck, I don't know what I do.
I don't know. No, we have conversations here about politics, and I just want them to be safe. You know, like when the younger ones, my kids are 19, 15, and 13, and the 15 and the 13, they were like, "Dad, there's a manifestation against ICE. Some of our friends they're going. Can we go?" And I was like, "Yeah, you should go."
Yeah.
But I was like
worried.
Yeah.
PodSave America is brought to you by Stamps.com. It is honestly shocking to me that to this very day, many small business owners are still making post office runs or are stuck with expensive postage meter leases. It's 2026, not 1926. Mail and ship when you want, how you want with Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can send from your computer or phone 24/7. No long lines, no low supplies, open anytime. Print postage on demand and get up to 90% off carrier rates like FedEx, UPS, and USPS. Schedule carrier pickups right from your door and get carrier compliant labels every time. No errors, no rejected mail, no wasted trips. It's perfect for your business. Send certified mail, get document tracking to confirm delivery and analytics to make sure you know exactly what you've sent and spent. For almost 30 years, millions of customers have relied on Stamps.com to make mailing and shipping faster and so simple. Look, if you're a small business owner and you are still like driving to the post office to drop stuff off, to mail stuff, to pick stuff up, it's just a huge time suck. Stamps.com is one of those tools that is so obvious. It makes sense. It's helped us here at Crooked. We've used it to send merch. We've saved time. We've saved money. We don't have to leave the home or the office. It's totally worth it. Right now, you can try Stamps.com risk-free for 60 days. Go to Stamps.com and use the code PSA to get 60 days risk-free. 60 days gives you plenty of time to see exactly how much time and money you're saving on every shipment. That's Stamps.com code PSA. Stamps.com code PSA.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
When we talk about sort of like masculinity and the ways in which fathers and sons can impart lessons to each other and just how much of our political moment is dictated by toxic masculinity, I must ask you, since you just sort of made a glancing mention of the Epstein files, like, what do you think of all that? I know that the corruption of the elites was something that happened in Brazil in this period, something that a lot of autocratic and dictatorial societies are familiar with, because you really can't get far unless you have buy-in from the richest, the most, and the most powerful. But like, when you see this Epstein stuff come out, like, I mean, what do you think of it? What is it? What is, like, what was your thought when you saw all the people that were mentioned
it's
in the
crazy because I sometimes catch myself like in a sort of like QAnon sort of like.
Well, I mean, I think all of us were like,
yeah. I was like, this is like going
QAnon, maybe kind of we hit on something there.
Conspiracy theorists about, because for sure we're talking about a financial elite,
yeah.
Right? That when I heard that Noam Chomsky was involved in this thing, I was like, yeah, man, you know, this is it. You know, for sure, most of the people involved in these scandals are, you know, conservative politicians. It's not about right or left.
No, it's about power and wealth.
It's about power and wealth. And for me, that is coming from a country where social inequality mm-hmm. is the biggest issue. you know, is the biggest issue of Brazil. And every time, with the exception of Lula, that's why I respect him so much. But every time a president in Brazil or someone tried to do something about it, this person got ousted, you know, got impeached, or there was a coup d'etat or something. Every time, because people make lots of money. The interest rates in Brazil is like, I don't know, I don't even know. It's like the biggest in the world, and you know? so the banks makes lots of money in financial. It's a system that they don't want to
disrupt,
be changed. So it's just it's hard not to go like, oh my God, this world is being ruled by lizards.
Is it weird to be in a place like Hollywood when this stuff comes out? Because he made inroads. Epstein was always trying to get to Hollywood. And there is a certain, like, Hollywood can look away from things it doesn't want to see. We know that from the Me Too movement.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, like, I wonder what it's like to be a bit of a radical and to be politically engaged and being someone who's ready to resist and I'm not asking you to like smear Hollywood, but so much of Hollywood is transactional and it's just about like, you know, who knows who and power and access.
Don't expose yourself. Be, you know.
Exactly. What? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, way smaller scale, I lived this in Brazil as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
A star system in Brazil as well that it operates sort of in the same way, so, but in a way smaller scale. And it's how the same that we spoke in the beginning. Like I really understand people that don't want to go out there and say things, you know. Although I agree with you, if there's a moment to go out there and say shit, I think it's now. But I understand who doesn't want to do that, you know, because it's the people are not equipped emotionally or intellectually, people shouldn't talk about things that they don't understand.
I get that.
But it's for me. Yeah, I'll keep being myself. Just again, the thing that I tell to my kids all the time is like, be yourself. You know, what you are is good enough. Don't try to be something else. Don't try to impress anyone. Just, you are wonderful just the way you are. Just be yourself and you'll be fine. Stick with the values that you have.
And you, meanwhile, are going to be someone else every couple months. I'm kidding. I know what you're saying.
But yeah, but that's another thing about it. Like,
I will be Pablo Escobar.
but that's the point. For me, it's interesting. I've come to realize more and more that when I play a character, it's way more a version of myself than anything else. You know, like, it's not like the idea that actors like put masks in front of them.
You're not method.
I think we expose ourselves a lot when we play, even when we play characters like Pablo Escobar.
Can I ask you, I ask you this because you're from South America, and Trump's ramp up to the Super Bowl and Bad Bunny performing and was like so, the racism usually like lives right on the surface, but in that moment and the aftermath, it was like, the degradation of Latin culture and the accusations that like, you can't be part of America, you know, Bad Bunny saying together we are America and ending the Super Bowl, listing off, including your home country, all these countries and suggesting like the prospect, the promise of this place is its inclusivity and that you can be Brazilian, but you're also American. Mm-hmm. How did that moment strike you when you were, I mean, I don't know if you watch football, but like, I assume the sort of do you speak English? What language do you speak? Like the whole debate about having this performer and what he said ultimately in his joyous celebration of a halftime
beautiful.
Show.
I didn't see the whole thing. I saw a video afterwards and I thought he was beautiful. I thought he was brave and because for me, it's always I could be here talking to you and saying things and I can say here right now, I think Donald Trump is racist, mm-hmm. right? And I keep telling this and doing this all the time. This wouldn't be as important or stronger than, for example, the film that we did, The Secret Agent. I think that what fascists are afraid of is not they're not afraid of, because they, any fascist government, they attack journalists, they attack artists, they attack universities. But with artists, I don't think that they are afraid of what we say publicly. They are afraid of what we do.
Yeah.
You know, this is what concerns them, you know. And so Bad Bunny in the Grammys, he went up there and he said, eyes out, and it was like fucking cool. But what he did with that performance is way more powerful.
Totally.
It's his talent and what it, that's what he was born to do. And the way he did it, I was very moved.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Performance. And of course, in Trump's reaction is a clear display of racism. But also fear,
I think, too.
And
right?
Fear. And fear. That's what I'm talking about. And fear. That's right. And fear.
Because to your point, I mean, Trump wants to believe, as much of a cultural idiot as he is, I think you're totally right about artists being a very powerful bulwark to authoritarianism, because they have the hearts and the mind of the people. They have this magic to them that can't easily be stamped out and can't be dismissed as partisan chicanery. It's something that Trump will never have, that magic that Bad Bunny had. And the goodness and the like joy of that performance is the opposite of what he's offering to the
and
American people.
And being such a narcissist, you know, for him.
Yes.
But you said very right. It's like fear is a... I'm convinced that the whole, all the bad things in the world, they all come out of fear and insecure and lack of self esteem. Like going back to the guys killing Alex Petri in Minneapolis, I saw those men. They were in fear. That's what I could see. You know, like. Very scared man. They were always scared. There's something in their life. And exactly, and the way they recruit the ICE people, from what I heard, it's very particular. It's like they're gathering people with very, not only ideologically, but like there is something about these men that connect them in their fear, in their lack of self-esteem, in the way that they've been, you know, like in their minds that they've been relegated their entire lives. And I could see this when Bolsonaro got elected, when all his secretaries and ministers, there were like a bunch of people that no one really never cared about. It was like mm-hmm. people, there were like a lot of like people with so much resentment in their hearts and now it's my moment. Now it's
totally true. Well, I would argue the same is true of the Trump administration. It's like the cabinet of broken toys. It's people who have faced rejection, who feel less than, and who've been given some power and are going to use that to, you know, put the boot on other people's necks. I think it's also why ICE wears masks. It's for their own, it's like they're also, they know that part of their impunity is because they're hidden. But if they actually had to face the music of what they're doing, the depravity of it, like they're terrified of what they're doing.
That says a lot, exactly.
The masks are a huge part of this.
The mask says a lot, you know, why you're not showing your face.
I got to ask you about this because I was really struck by this quote. After Narcos, a series I absolutely loved so much. Again, it's like, I know every journalist does this in these interviews with you, so I'm trying my best not to be fawning. But anyway, you said you turned down a lot of interviews after Narcos because you didn't want to be like the Latin bad guy. And in an interview, you said, I want to play a character who speaks the way I speak because I represent a big portion of this country, people who came here, speak with accents, and are important for what we know as the United States, which is chef's kiss, no notes. But like, was that a political, how much of a political, that feels like a really political statement in this day
and age.
Yeah,
it's for sure a political statement. You know, I don't want to do anything that would be, you know, that would represent my people in a way that would be stereotype or would mm-hmm. the image. Representation matters a lot. You know, I think that it's great to see you know, to have kids back in, like in Brazil, looking at the kind of characters that I want to play, or that, you know, one thing that I was very like, I love to see Diego Luna in Star Wars.
I know. You know, he's like so good.
That's so important. Like a Mexican little boy there in Mexico, or like the Mexican communities, or the people that speak Spanish here in this country, go like, oh my God, there's this dude speaking with that accent and it's in the Star Wars world. I belong to that too. I think this is so important, you know, for kids, for the new generations. And yeah, it's for sure a political statement.
Pedro Pascal needs to take that Mandalorian mask off. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. He's great. He's great.
Positive America is brought to you by Bombas. Whether you've been able to stick to your resolutions this year, there's one goal that should remain at the top of your list: get comfy. That's where Bombas comes in. They're bringing serious comfort to all your everyday go-tos. The all-new Bombas Sport socks are engineered with sport-specific comfort for running, golf, hiking, skiing, snowboarding, and all sport. They're cushioned where you need it most, sweat-wicking, and loaded with other tech features to keep you comfy and locked in. For those everyday around-the-house resolutions, Bombas also has you covered with the comfiest footwear imaginable. They got these luxurious Sherpa Sunday slippers that feel like you're walking on clouds. Yeah, I could use some Sunday slippers.
I went and bought, right over around Christmas, I bought a bunch of new Bombas socks, like a half dozen or so, and they're great. They're super comfortable. They're like the no-show ones, but they're really cushy still.
I like that.
I know.
Do they wick some moisture as well?
They wick their asses off.
So important.
They're great.
For every item you purchase, an essential clothing item is donated to someone facing housing insecurity. One purchased, one donated, with over 150 million donations and counting. Head over to bombas.com/crooked and use code crooked for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/crooked, code crooked at checkout.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Let me ask you, because I feel like on your CV, it says that you at one point worked as a journalist. Is that right?
Yeah. I graduated as a journalist. That's why I care so much about journalism, and I'm so concerned about the state of journalism.
Is that why you took the less glamorous path of a Hollywood superstar? It was just like it was too much pressure being a journalist.
No, I think that I wouldn't. That wasn't my thing. I don't think I would be a very good journalist.
Why?
I think it requires a lot of, I have lots of interest in other people and I want to know about it. But there is a thing that a journalist has to be very, you know, invasive sometimes.
Like and me not, saying why?
No, not you. No, but you know, like you have to be relaxed.
Yeah, you do.
You know, you have to like keep not receiving a no and going back there and knocking at their door and try. And I don't think I had that kind of skills, you know. And also, too, when I worked as a journalist, I had a very romantic idea that I wanted to be like, oh, the president's man kind of thing, yeah. And do something that. And the kind of thing that I was doing when I started as a journalist was very like.
What were you doing? Do you remember?
I remember that I covered police. I had to go to the police station and know how many people died. How
that's what Woodward and Bernstein were doing. They were weekend beat reporters.
It was very like, and also I did some cultural things too. And I don't know, man. I think that's acting is more.
Well, you're nominated for an Academy Award. Obviously, you chose the right path.
My friends from the city where I'm from Salvador Bahia, most of them are my. I met my wife in college, studying journalism. Most of my friends are journalists, and I'm very concerned of the state of journalism as a business and as a idea. It's the Washington Post thing is very. It was a very sad thing to see, you know, like I was like, Jeff Bezos has $40 million to put in that documentary, and he couldn't, you know, he had to fire all these people, like from the Washington Post. The Washington Post is a very, very important institution for American democracy.
Yeah.
You know, again, talking about all the presidents, man, you know, like it's so those kind of things really, this concerns me a lot.
Well, you talk about Watergate, and I'm reminded of the 1970s in America, which was like an incredible period of cinema. Mm-hmm. I think in large part because it was a response to Vietnam and Watergate and the corruption of institutions. Do you feel optimistic that we're going to, I mean, and your movie is obviously, you did it in 24, and we've obviously been talking about autocracy and dictatorships a lot in the Western world. Are you optimistic that Hollywood can react in the way that it did, like it did in the 70s and sort of be fertile again? Or do you feel like the system is fucked beyond repair?
I'm very bad with this. Predictions. I never know what's going to happen, and I don't know how the impact of technology is going to have in what we do. I can see that the AI thing is moving so fast. There's AI actors already. You know, like I don't know. You know, I don't know the grip of this technology. The film, The Secret Agent, had if you noticed. It had a very huge, Kleber Mendonça Filho, the director of this film, he loves American films, as I do, from the 70s.
Yeah, and is very influenced by that.
Very clear, even with the way he shoots with the panoramic lenses and the zooms and the political aspects of 3 Days of Condor and all those films from Peckinpah, from you know, De Palma and...
Peckinpah, all these.
Pakula... This is a great era of for films in the world.
And the clothes are so fucking awesome. Let's just say,
yeah, the clothes are great. I hope so. Listen, I hope.
Are you kidding? You look amazing. The wardrobe.
The clothes are great, but I to your question, I hope so. I think I really liked One Battle After Another. I thought that it was a great film. You know, about a revolution in the future, and also like again, like a film that was, they shot it. I don't know when they shot that, but you know, and then all these film that starts with lots of Latinos getting in a prison and the revolutionaries freeing them, and I think filmmakers and artists will keep doing our thing, you know, like it's like despite of economical powers and Hollywood and the grip that money has on the studios and the technology thing, and I think we'll keep doing our thing. It's just what we do.
Well, you said something really beautiful at the beginning of this, which I want to get back to before we close it out, which is, you know, generational trauma can be passed down, but so can I'm getting it wrong already. Is it generational hope? I mean, I think one of the
values,
values. You said generational trauma can be passed down, but so can generational values. And I think, honestly, one of the ways you remind people, we remind ourselves of who we are and in all of our complexities is through art, right? Like, it's like this film is a reminder of what happened in Brazil, but it's a way for Brazil to also reconcile her past or his, whatever we want to, his past, whatever. And it's a holding a mirror back up to ourselves, but that's also how it's a statement of values and priorities that you make art like that, right? That One Battle After Another and the Secret Agent are both going to be Best Picture nominees is a value statement about what matters and what resonates in our culture. And that's really hopeful.
I think so. I think so too. And I think that this is so, it's been so important, because the far right in Brazil, they were very efficient in transforming artists, of course, into the enemies of the people. There's a big discussion in Brazil about if the government should fund culture or not. Of course, the far right says that no, we shouldn't, they shouldn't do that. And they said that all these artists, they are, you know, they're using the money to that we should build a school or a hospital, and we're doing a film. bunch of.
It's bullshit. That's a false statement. Yeah. That's a false choice.
It's the false. But you know, but people, it's crazy because people see that and people go like, oh, yeah, I prefer a school than a fucking film, you know. And this has been a battle after another that we are fighting.
Yeah, man.
That we are fighting in Brazil against this kind of thing because no country I grew up watching American films, right? So that for me were international films, but that I saw with subtitles. But my understanding of what the U.S. is comes from the films that I saw.
Yeah,
you know, every time I think about Christmas, although in Brazil it's summer, I think about snow because of the American Christmas films. So, that was something that was important for me to read your country, to have empathy for these people, to admire things about this culture, to, you know, and to see things that I didn't like as well, and to go like, oh, that's not cool, and to form an idea of other countries. But I guess it's even more important for Americans like throughout history, like to be able to see themselves, to go like, oh, so this is who we are.
Exactly.
And we are, this is, and great things. And that's the shaping of a culture. No country develops without that. So the false dichotomy of like hospitals or films, it's stupid because we need films, we need books, we need to see ourselves in our I love what's going on in Brazil right now. The way people are embracing this film, even with the polarization and seeing like this film represents us. You know, this is Brazil. You know, this is a part of Brazil, it's a part of Brazilian history. So yeah, I think this is indeed very, very important.
Yeah, it's like why, you know, the videos of Alex Preti and Renee Nicole Good are really important. But then it's also important to see Bad Bunny at the Super Bowl. And it's also important, you know, it's all of a piece. It's all America.
Yeah.
And the only truth, the truth is not distilled into just one image, but many images, right? So
yeah.
Can I ask you, like, do you know what you're going to say if you win?
I really don't expect.
Are you going to say ice out? I'm kidding.
I have no idea. I think that I'm so happy that we, honestly, like no bullshit, we got so far. It's crazy. You know, this Brazilian film had four nominations to the Academy Awards. We won awards in Cannes. We won awards in the Golden Globes. It's great. You know, I think that we are where we didn't really dream to be when we were doing this movie. So, yeah, I don't have expectations to win an award this time, really.
You've given more thought to what happens if ICE detains you than if you actually win the Academy Award.
That I should be definitely thinking about. Why isn't he here? Oh, he's detained. Oh my God.
No, well, that would be amazing for the cause. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. Now. I could have a chance.
Thanks to this podcast, we've put a target on your back. Not the intention at all. And we know you would get out fast. Because
that would generate lots of publicity, for sure.
Well, listen, I hope that you win it and there's no ICE agents anywhere near. It's an extraordinary film. You're an extraordinary, it's so reassuring to have artists who are also politically engaged and just so fucking awake. It's awesome. It's great to have you on a program like this. And it means a lot, both I think for us here at Crooked, but also for our audience. And it's just great to see a handshake between politics and art that's so effortless and so real. So
I think that they walk together. I don't see art. I think that they're really entangled. Like our arts and politics is sort of like the same, you know. I think that's how I see it.
Listen, I wanted to be an actor, but I became a journalist. You wanted to be a journalist, became an actor. I think we ended up in our right lanes.
And we're both Wagners.
We needed a Wagner in journalism and one in.
There's a lot in common here.
We're siblings from a different mother. I don't know, I guess something like that. Yeah. It is a true pleasure, Wagner. Thank you for spending some time with me today. You're the best.
Thank you.
Thank you to Wagner Moura for being such a sport about all of this. I hope this doesn't dim your prospects getting a Pixar movie. but keep making these movies, and everybody, please keep supporting artists who can have conversations like this in the middle of an Academy Award season by going to see The Secret Agent, which is streaming now, or by going back into the vaults and checking out season one of Narcos, where he is totally awesome. Thank you to Wagner for doing this, and thank you guys all for listening.
If you want to listen to Pod Save America ad-free and get access to exclusive podcasts, go to Cricut.com/friends to subscribe on Supercast, Substack, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts. Also, please consider leaving us a review. That helps boost this episode and everything we do here at Cricut. Pod Save America is a Cricut Media production. Our producer is Saul Rubin. Our associate producer is Farah Safari. Austin Fisher is our senior producer. Reed Cherlin is our executive editor. Adrian Hill is our head of news and politics. The show is mixed and edited by Andrew Chadwick. Jordan Cantor is our sound engineer, with audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Matt DeGroat is our head of production. Naomi Sengel is our executive assistant. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn, Haley Jones, Ben Hefcoat, Mia Kelman, Kirill Pelaviv, David Tolles, and Ryan Young. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.